Sa gagne tout. 10 secondes sur ça, il vient de se soigner. Et que je suis dans les everybody, welcome back to Banterbox, a review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week, we will be breaking down a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, whatever we're feeling like. And this week, continuing our Star Wars series, we watched Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists that I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey everyone, it's Samuel, your resident Star Wars nerd!
I'm back, everyone! Calm down, it's alright! Tyler's back!
Yeah.
Give me back Rick. Please. It's John, send help.
John, baby, please.
John's been broken in the first 2 seconds of this episode. Well, so I'm pretty sure all of us had seen this before. I know the boys had, and I saw it sort of one time. I'm assuming that since y'all are the big Star Wars boys, that y'all have definitely seen this
movie. I have seen it so many times, it's not even funny.
What is a rogue, and why is there only one of them? yeah, no, I definitely have seen this. I think two or three times.
So I say I've seen it so many times, it's not even funny. I've probably seen it about 6 or 7 times.
Oh my god, you really like this movie.
Well, and it's like I said, if I'm going to sit down and watch, you know, episode 2 or episode 3 something, I want to watch the entire saga. This is one of those movies I can just watch.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't really have to worry about that.
That's a good point.
More just because it's a standalone.
Just
because
it's a single, yeah.
It's like you said when we were watching it, that this really does feel like a one-shot if you want to compare it to like D&D. Which makes it really like palatable and user friendly, especially because everybody knows episode 4, so
yeah.
or A New Hope. So it's like you go in there and it just does such a, like, this is such a love letter to Star Wars, in my opinion. and it's so nice because you could tell that there's like a lot of love and care that went into making this movie, which I just genuinely appreciated.
Johnny boy.
Yeah, no, I've actually, oddly enough, I watched this movie. I've seen it 3 times, but I recently rewatched it because, again, like Samuel said, it's a movie that I don't feel the need to go back and, like, rewatch the entire saga to kind of get that full Star Wars experience. But I actually watched it a few months ago, and I kind of just revisited it. Ooh, wow, that was a word. Revisited it.
Bring Rick back, please.
I refreshed myself the other night, and this movie's a breath of fresh air.
It's so good.
Yeah. It really is.
After Attack of the Clones? Yeah.
Oi!
Hey. It's not Samuel's fault. The movie wasn't that good.
I hate all of you.
I understand, but hey.
I think the joy that I get in watching this movie is matched, if not exceeded, by the frustration that the sequel trilogy does not live up to this set standard.
Yeah.
Like, this movie proves that you can make a new Star Wars movie that's good and engaging and a lot of fun with tie-ins to the original series, like, without it being just a mess.
Yeah.
And so you watch it and you're just like, why couldn't we have had more this?
Yeah.
For real.
So this was sort of my like a fresh watch for me, because the last time we watched it, Samuel was showing me several movies in one day, because I think this was during the pandemic.
It was right during the middle of the pandemic,
and we were
doing nothing but just sitting on the couch watching movies.
Yeah, and so we were like alternating showing each other different like movies and stuff, and so we had watched probably like 3 movies already that day, at least one of them being Endgame. Like, we had watched Endgame, I think we had watched Solo, and then we go straight into Rogue One after that. And I'm exhausted by that point.
Understandably so.
And so for a, like, he asked me, as we were about to, like, start the movie, he asked me, what do you remember? And I basically just listed off the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty much all I remember.
The beach fight, yeah.
I was like, I don't remember anything else that happened in the movie. This is what I remember. And I was like, and I remember the scientist dad, and that's what I remember are those characters and these events. And he was like, yeah, so you slept most of the movie until it got loud at the end. And I was like, pretty much. But yeah, so this was sort of like my first watch, even though I knew exactly where it was going.
Sure.
I do have an interesting take that when I told Sam about it yesterday, he agreed with me, so I'm curious to see what you two think about it.
Okay.
But we'll wait until we actually like get to the point in a few minutes.
Ah, stay tuned.
But this movie came out in 2016. It was directed by Gareth Edwards and was written by Chris Weitz and Tony Gilroy, and stars Felicity Jones as Jyn Erso and Diego Luna as Cassian Andor. You can watch this with a Disney Plus subscription, or you can buy or rent it on Vudu, Apple TV, YouTube, Prime Video, or Google Play. And the IMDb summary for this says, in a time of conflict, a group of unlikely heroes band together on a mission to steal plans to the Death Star, the Empire's ultimate weapon of destruction. Samuel.
So our director, Gareth Edwards, is very interesting. I didn't know much about him going into this. He has very few credits. He has like 3 credits. He was a VFX artist who ended up becoming a director, and he got into filmmaking because of A New Hope.
Wow.
That actually makes so much
That's
sense.
A New Hope made him want to go into filmmaking.
I mean, the fact that he became a VFX guy and A New Hope was like his inspiration, that makes so much sense for this movie.
Yeah, that's so cool that, and he got to do the
prequel. The first movie he directed was a small movie called Monsters. And then the next movie he directed was the 2014 Godzilla movie.
What?
Wow. Was that the Millie Bobby Brown
yep.
one?
I don't think she was in that one.
No, no, no.
I think Godzilla, Gods and Monsters or something like that was the one she was in. But yeah, and then his next one was Rogue One. And he's working on a movie right now, but it has not come out yet. So those are all of his filmmaking credits.
No kidding.
But yeah, I thought that was all pretty interesting. Our writers are fascinating to me. So, Chris Weitz, his first writing credit was 1998's Ants.
What?
You're kidding me.
No, it was not.
He then wrote a movie called Nutty Professor 2, The Clumps.
What?
And then his next movie he wrote was a drama called About a Boy, which got nominated for Best Screenplay at the Academy Awards.
I have heard of About a Boy.
Yeah, I have too.
And then he directed Twilight New Moon.
What?
This guy is my hero.
What a Rogue One.
What a checkered.
That is the career that Daniel Radcliffe is trying to have now. That's so wild.
Like,
I love
what?
It.
Our next guy, Tony Gilroy, his career makes a lot more sense. He's worked a lot with Matt Damon. So his first movie he wrote was Armageddon, which was the Bruce Willis movie.
Oh my god.
And then he wrote all of the first 4 Bourne movies.
What?
And then he wrote a drama called Michael Clayton, which also got nominated for Best Screenplay at the Oscars.
I remember that.
And then he wrote the Matt Damon movie The Great Wall.
You definitely told me about the Jason Bourne thing while we were watching it.
No, I told you something else, which is interesting, which had nothing to do with this, I thought, because I didn't know this. But the director, because they're making a TV show about Cassian Andor.
Yeah.
About his time in the Rebellion and all the stuff he had to do. And the showrunner for that is the director of the Bourne movies.
Wow.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah. That's what I told you, because I had no idea about Tony Gilroy. So they might be working together on that.
Maybe.
Since presumably they've worked together on the first 4 Bourne movies, they might be working together again on Andor, because I know a lot of times they'll bring the writers back for certain characters because the writers feel like they know them and all. So
yeah.
Yep.
What an interesting character to pluck out of the Star Wars universe to make a short.
Honestly, I'm for it.
Like, I'm not
really
against
for it.
It's just such a niche pick.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect it, but that almost makes me like it
well
more.
That's always
yeah,
been like my thing with like extended universe stuff or things like that, is I always want it to be a character that we didn't really get enough from in the original like series or something. A good example would be what everyone has always said is that we want a series about the Marauders, because while we got some of them as adults, we didn't get to see really any of them other than flashbacks in the books and the movies. In the movies, super brief.
Mm-hmm.
And in the books, a little longer.
You're talking about for Harry Potter?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That everyone says they want to see that. And, like, there are a lot of interesting characters in, like, different series that you could pluck out and just, like, expand upon their life. And it would be really cool going back and watching the first thing you saw them in later.
Well, I really wanted to see young Dumbledore and Grindelwald, but just, like, good. So
here's the thing.
Shame.
I did not have any shade towards those actors and how they portrayed the characters.
Me neither.
I just think that
the movies were atrocious.
I think there was no point to making them. I would have loved to have just made it, let's go back and let's make this essentially like the all about Dumbledore's life.
I agree. Growing up. I agree.
I don't see why it had to be about Newt Scamander when it's not really about Newt Scamander at all. I'm like, if it's going to be about Newt Scamander, let's make it just about Newt Scamander and right. not about all these other characters as well.
And make it like a fun romp with like animals and stuff. And yeah. it's like, okay, it's cute. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's and palatable. And that's kind of what
the first movie was, but not really.
Disgusting. Yeah, anyway, but Star Wars.
Yeah, let's get back to Star Wars. At some point, we'll do a Harry Potter series, but that's going to be a long way away. Wait. But yeah, so before we dive into the plot, does anyone have any sort of overarching stuff they want to talk about first? I know I have my hot take.
I really want to hear the hot take.
So this is something that Sam actually agreed with me on, and I want to see if you guys do too. I'm not saying that I like supported him.
Oh God.
But I felt so unbelievably bad for Krennic through the whole movie. Like, to a really yeah. intense extent, where I was like, it's not like, I get it, he's not like a good dude, but he was just doing his job and not getting any credit or any reward or anything for it, just getting crapped on left and right by his bosses when he's just asking for credit and just asking to, like, continue to do the same job. The credit
that he honestly deserves.
He did, he deserved right. the credit, and I'm sitting there like, oh my gosh, and like, at the end... I asked Sam, I was like, was I supposed to get some satisfaction out of watching him look up and see the Death Star looming and know that he was going to die from it? Because I didn't. I just felt bad for him. I was like, he didn't earn that. Like, he earned the death that they gave him where Cassian shoots him. I was like, that's the death he earned. That's fine. He didn't earn that, like, poetic justice in quotes death of getting yeah, killed by your own machine.
He did.
I don't think he did the whole time. So
here's the thing. I think he earned the death. And just judging on what he did, his actions, he earned the death, not from a storytelling perspective, from a morality perspective. You sure, work on a genocide sure. machine and you get killed by it, you kind of earned that.
Sure, yeah, that's
I agree.
Fine.
But from a storytelling perspective, I agree yeah. that he was not... He worked well as a villain, but not because you hated him, but because you felt his just... his desperation.
And that's why it wasn't yes. satisfying. If it had been someone who was genuinely, like, I felt like they were the worst person, and, like, they... And he got all of the credit that he had deserved, and he was still just, like, a terrible person, then I would have been like, okay. But I just felt bad for him the entire time, and, like, it just kept making me wince every time he kept, like, just asking for what he did deserve... And then getting, like, force-choked and getting this and getting this. And I'm just like, he hasn't earned this.
I think Vader will do that to you.
I honest to God think that that's just a reflection of Ben Mendelsohn's fantastic acting. Because I feel like you put another actor in that spot and you would get a completely different takeaway. You put yeah, a different maybe. Actor in there with different choices, like subtle choices, but different ones. And you get the bad guy from The Shape of Water.
Yeah.
That's what you get. Because the bad guy from The Shape of Water is in the same boat.
Yeah.
Nothing's
yeah.
going right. He's doing his best. He's doing his job. And he's not getting credit for anything. But you go, I hope this guy dies a brutal, disgusting death.
Yeah.
And when it happens, it's like, good. Screw you.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, because of Ben Mendelsohn's performance, he did such a good job that of trying to humanize this character and say, okay, park the given circumstances that I'm working on a genocide machine. You know, I have, like, I'm not some psychopath who's just going to wait. Like small things like him approaching the house with the death squad mm-hmm. going, I'm not here to kill you guys. I'm here to welcome you as heroes to the Empire, which you are. Get in the car. And they're just like, no, we're not getting in the car. He's like, I will kill your wife and child. Get in the car. And he's like, no. And so he's like, all right, well, I hope you didn't like your wife because now she's dead. So, but you know, so the whole time, like things like, not like, you know, threatening to kill the scientist who you know he has a connection with. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, get over here. And then he slaps him across the face and guns down the rest of the scientists just to make a point. The guy's bad.
But even then, we've already seen human. We've already seen all the other stuff that has driven him to that. Where right. like, where we've seen him losing his mind on...
Krennic.
On,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Name? Tarkin. Tarkin.
Tarkin, yes. Yeah. When he's losing his mind on him, like, how dare you take... Yeah, he's like, this is mine. And I'm like...
Not yours!
And that's the thing, is I was with him. I was like, you're right, this is yours. He shouldn't be taking it from you. I agree. Like, yeah. I'm not saying you're a good dude, but it was your job that you did. And then he keeps going above and beyond to, like, try and continue to make this thing a success constantly. Like, he's ahead of everybody on all the things, like, trying to catch up. And I'm just so frustrated.
You know what? Go ahead.
Sorry. Tarkin honestly shoots himself in the foot on this one, because all this pushing and driving leads Krennic to eliminate anyone else who might have knowledge of this little flaw in the Death Star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it also puts Tarkin instead of Krennic on the Death Star.
Right. And most importantly, I think it mirrors an old Middle Ages tale that I remember hearing, where it was Middle Ages. I don't even know when this was, but it was there. It was the guy who was the head designer for all the torture machines in this time period in like France or whatever, yeah. Right? And he came out with all these disgusting, horrible, atrocious methods of the most gruesome, painful torture you can imagine. And his magnum opus was this giant brass bull that you'd open up a compartment it's like the statue of a bull, but it's hollow on the inside. You open up the compartment, shove somebody in it, and then set a fire under, like a campfire, underneath the bowl, and it like literally like cooks the person alive. It's disgusting and horrible. And so he's like, this is the magnum opus. This is the worst, most excruciating torture that I could create, and I give this to you, my king. And the king's just like, cool, I will definitely use this, thank you very much, but you're disgusting for thinking about this. You're going in the bowl. He's like, wait, what? And then he puts him in the bowl and kills him in the worst possible way. Gruesome and awful as that story is, and also very poetic, that's Krennic. That's Krennic. Regardless of his inspirations or his reasoning for doing what he's doing, he's creating a planet killer. This is genocide on a level like.
Trust me, I'm not supporting genocide.
No, I know you're not. Clear. I know you're not supporting that. I just think it's like, you know, you make something like that, you completely forego any sympathy. The sympathy that I feel for him is in spite of itself, because it's like, you don't deserve this, but the actor's doing such a good job. You're like, mm-hmm. I feel it. Like, I felt it. I understand what
like,
you're talking
about. Like, when he
looks
up and sees it, and sees it, like, you know, in the atmosphere, I'm
so
just like...
awesome.
I'm sitting there, and again, yeah, he created it, and so, yes, from a morality perspective, he absolutely deserves to die from it. Like, yes, absolutely. I'm on
right.
board. But at the same time, I'm like, but he is never gonna, like... get the credit that he deserves for spending years and years and years creating it, and it's going to go to somebody else, and like, and yeah, that person is also going to die, like, you know, because of the whole flaw and all that stuff. But it's like, you know, I just kept being frustrated as maybe it's just as someone who has also gone without getting their due credit on several things before,
yeah,
that I was just sitting there like, I get it. He's the bad guy. I shouldn't feel bad, but I do.
Yeah. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, it was very frustrating.
That's an interesting take, though. I mean, it was definitely something I was kind of grappling with, because it's like, bad man, bad, of course, yes. But like, I do, he's doing
also,
a really good
I
job.
Feel bad.
Yeah. Maybe I'm bad, too.
Yeah, Sam told me, he was like, no, I'm on board. Like, I feel that, too. And I was like, well, we'll see if everybody else does, because I have no clue. But let's dive into the plot here. So, research scientist Galen Erso and his family are in hiding on the planet, is it Lamu? When Imperial weapons developer Orson Krennic arrives to press him into completing the Death Star, a space station-based superweapon capable of destroying entire planets. Galen's wife Lyra is killed in the confrontation, while their daughter Jin escapes and is rescued by rebel extremist Saw Gerrera. So something that I'm going to really be enjoying in this plot summary is I didn't want to keep stopping the movie when we were watching it yesterday, but there were a lot of moments where I just did not get what was going on. I understood the major through line for the most part, but there were a lot of small things I just didn't gather. And I was like, if I keep asking every 5 minutes what just happened, I'm going to be the most annoying person to watch this movie with. So I told Sam, I was like, I'm kind of going to rely on this plot summary today to walk me through some stuff that I definitely did not catch on to. all that beginning part I gathered, but we're going to, from here on in, we're going to see what I go, oh, it. But 15 years later, cargo pilot Bodhi Rook defects from the Empire, taking a holographic message recorded by Galen to Guerrera on the desert moon Jeddah. Well, Rebel Alliance intelligence officer Cassian Andor learns of Rook's defection and the Death Star from an informant. Jyn is freed from an Imperial labor camp at Wabani and is brought to the Rebel leader Mon Mothma, who convinces her to find and rescue Galen so that the Alliance can learn more about the Death Star. Cassian is covertly ordered to kill Galen rather than extract him. I thought he was just doing it for some crazy reason.
Oh, yeah, no, the guy explicitly tells him to kill Galen.
I don't remember that.
There is
what's actually funny to me is that if Cassian did end up killing Galen, it wouldn't have mattered. Because Galen himself in the holographic message says, they don't need me anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I am purposely here to sabotage the own creation I've made.
Well, and I think it's what he said is that he, even from the beginning, was like, they really don't need me for this project, but I'm going to convince them that they do so that I can put this thing, like, into the machine.
Which is super cool. And it answers a huge concern that people had where it's like, in episode 4, mm-hmm. Why is a giant Death Star, like, battle station, killable well, by shooting the, one proton torpedo down? That's the funniest part about
this movie, is this movie is an answer to a plot hole from like 30 years earlier.
That no one really cares splendidly. About. I agree. It makes such a stupid plot hole like that. It's like, who cares? It's the 80s. It's fun. It's whatever. It's a little Star Wars action. And it takes something so silly and makes it so real
mm-hmm.
and human because there's human elements and thought processes behind it. Like, that's just the... Oh, God, man. Like, you can't see that and not go, there's so much love here.
Yeah.
And then you see that, too, in the VFX, which is incredible that he was a VFX artist beforehand, which very clearly shows the entire time watching the movie with these two, I'm sitting here going, oh, my God. Wow.
Look at that. Every, like, 5 minutes, he's just, like, beautiful. Like,
that's beautiful. Look at that. Are you guys seeing that? Look at that. Would you just look at that?
No, the shot I remember the most from the movie as me thinking it was pretty was, I don't even remember exactly what was happening, but there was a ship coming in kind of over a, it was like a rock formation in
Jeddah.
Like a desert
Jeddah
space.
City.
That little circular kind of rock mm-hmm. formation where it turns and it just lands and everything is kind of like dusty as it lands and it's like sunset-y. And I was like, that's pretty.
It's awesome.
I did not gather that. So when he just like went to kill him and was aiming at him, I was like, this guy's going rogue. What's happening here? I was like, I mean, I guess I kind of get it, but like I didn't realize he had orders because I just missed that apparently. But Jyn, Cassian, and reprogrammed Imperial droid K2SO travel to Jeddah.
Best character.
Where the Empire is removing kyber crystals from the Holy City to power the Death Star. Guerrera and his partisans are engaged in an armed insurgency against them. With the aid of blind spiritual warrior, Chirrut Imwe?
Yeah, Chirrut Imwe.
Imwe, mm-hmm. Okay. And his mercenary friend, Baze Malbus, Jyn makes contact with Guerrera, who has been holding Rook captive. K2SO, can I just say one thing? So, K2SO, he was the perfect amount of comic relief without too much.
Yes, I very much agree.
Like the
because
whole
this is probably the most serious Star Wars movie ever made.
For sure.
And he was able to be humorous, but even the kind of humor, it wasn't the C-3PO.
It was very
rhino
like
humor,
deadpan.
Where it was like, oh,
like,
look at me, I'm dumb. It was just him just sarcastically commentating mm-hmm. on everything,
yes.
which was brilliant.
Yes. I could not
like,
agree more.
Would you like to know the probability of her using that against you? And he's just like, shut up, and he's
it's
just
high.
Like, it's high. It's really high. Just like it was such great sarcastic deadpan humor for that exact like I guess tone
mm-hmm.
of the movie that I was just really really impressed by.
Alan Tudyk knocked it out of the park, which he is one of the most malleable actors I've ever
We're going to be
seen.
Seeing him next week in a very different role.
We will
in the movie 42.
Oh, is that the movie we're watching next week?
Next week we're doing 42.
And he is in a very, very different role in that movie.
Yeah. He also plays Hey Hey the Chicken in Moana.
What?
Yeah, he plays
I didn't
a lot
know
of
that. That's incredible.
Wow.
No, Alan Tudyk is like the most, like, he's all over the place. He's got like some of the best range I think I've ever seen.
So Guerrera shows her the message in which Galen reveals he has secretly built a vulnerability into the Death Star and directs them to retrieve the schematics from an Imperial databank on the planet Scarif. On the Death Star, Krennic orders a low-powered test shot, which destroys Jedha's capital. Jyn and her group take Rook and flee the moon, but Guerrera remains to die with the city. So here's a question I have. So Jedha was the planet. Mm-hmm. They were in, I guess, the capital of Jedha.
Mm-hmm.
The whole planet didn't get destroyed by that shot.
No, because they called it a single reactor ignition. So in other words, they weren't coming even close to using the full power.
Because they did the same thing on Scarif.
Correct.
Yes.
Because he also said a single reactor, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was sitting there, and with how small of the thing, it was such a small, like, yes, it was a big explosion, but it did not cover the whole planet. I was like, is it going to just spread to the whole planet? Or is this just not, is the Death Star not the Death Star?
I mean, it's very similar to, you know, like a nuclear or atomic bomb kind of deal. Like, the initial explosion impact radius isn't super long, but then you have that radiation or that crater radius that follows afterwards.
Yeah.
If you ask me, I mean, you look at that, I'm no math doctor, but you shoot a planet with that much force, realistically, it decimates the planet regardless, just over time. And when I say over time, I mean you've got about maybe a day left before the after effects, like, get you on the other side of the planet. But this is Star Wars, and it looked really, really cool. And I didn't care.
And they said it was a mining accident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's believable.
They nuked, it wasn't even just a city. Like, that was a continent-level explosion for one city, which is hilarious. and it just shows, like, it's so good because it's so good to telegraph the lack of F's given that the Empire has for human life, period.
Yep.
There was one thing I noticed that I thought it would have been really funny if something happened with it, because you see kind of from the ground, from Jedha, you see things shooting up, like, into the atmosphere, sort of. You know, it's slow, but, like, actually going really fast, because it's the whole atmosphere. And the ship is right above it, and it's kind of coming towards the ship. And I was like, how funny would it be if it just wiped out the ship because it went all the way up? And they were like, that's getting kind of close. Should we move? And then too late. Like,
the shields are up, right? Are the shields gone?
I kept kind of expecting something to happen with that, and I was disappointed when it didn't.
That moment resulted in one of my favorite lines from K. There's a problem on the horizon. It's there, like, is, yeah, there is no horizon.
That was very funny. I loved K. K2 is great.
A lot of people had issues with Saw Gerrera dying in that scene. I don't understand why people hated that.
I thought it made sense.
No, especially considering his past and everything. So Saw Gerrera was a rebel insurgent during the Clone Wars. On a neutral planet that the Republic was not allowed to get involved with, essentially. And the Separatists were on it, and rather than going and fighting the Separatists on that planet, because the Republic wasn't allowed to, they went and they trained the people of the planet to fight back themselves. Okay. So Saw Gerrera was actually trained by Anakin and Obi-Wan.
Saw Gerrera was straight out of Mad Max Fury Road with that gas mask.
Yep.
Yeah.
And There's a whole thing where in the Clone Wars, it's him and his sister are the two leaders, and his sister's the voice of reason, and he's kind of the crazy warrior, and his sister dies, leading to him just going off the deep end.
Mm-hmm.
I thought considering everything that they showed us of his character in the Clone Wars, it made so much sense as to where he was and the fact that it was, like, if you're in that much pain, there reaches a certain point where you're like, you know what, just, I'm
save
done
me
fighting,
for what?
I'm done running,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, it made sense to me very much, like, you know, this is kind of what I've made here, you know, Captain goes down with his ship, like, why struggle to get out of here at this point, you know?
Mm-hmm. But it would have been such a meme if, because he goes outside to see the giant explosion coming towards him,
mm-hmm.
if he goes out with the holo disc of the hologram, then, wait, you forgot that.
And it's destroyed forever.
Yeah.
That would have been
funny. They're like, did you get the holo disc? No. No, everything happened so fast. It's like, what?
I mean, when she said that, that's something that would happen to me. Because, again, as soon as I saw this as a one-shot, that's all I was seeing it as. And I was like, I would have forgotten the holodisc. I would have just left. 100%.
Especially if you just saw your dad, like, the only family that you have left, like, admitting that everything he's done, he did for you, and you're having this, like, emotional... And then everything's
crashing around me all of a sudden. I would have just been like, run! I can't process this right now. Yes. And then suddenly I'm like, crap, I forgot the one thing we needed to, like, prove this to everybody. But yeah, so Grand Moff Tarkin congratulates Krennic before using Rook's defection and security leak as a pretext to take control of the project.
I tell you what, when this movie came out, the CGI for Tarkin was it looked so good
then,
and now it's like,
ugh. Now it is not good. Yes. Now it looks like a video game, straight up.
Yeah.
It
also raises a whole bunch of, which I believe the Cushing estate gave permission for it. It raises a whole bunch of different moral questions.
I don't like it. And ethical
questions.
Because
this is a man who passed away in, like, the 90s. They are effectively giving a performance by Peter Cushing in 2016.
I don't like it.
And it's a little weird.
I don't like it at all. I don't know. Like, some people could argue that it's, like, an honor to... that it's like honoring their legacy or whatever, but it almost seems like it's disrespectful of what they did when they were alive, because all I see it as is like you didn't quite make it far enough to give us what we wanted, so we're just gonna like use what you looked like and create a performance.
Obviously, like, I'm okay with it in cases like, you know, in the new Disney stuff with Luke, how Mark Hamill is still voicing the character, but they're CGIing a younger Mark Hamill. But also,
Mark Hamill's still alive to give his consent. Exactly, because
he's alive to give his permission to do that. It's really weird for me when it's someone who's dead, and I feel like you should just recast the role at that point. You can find someone who can do a good job, and the audience will accept it and believe it, but...
Find a good enough lookalike who's a good enough actor, and there are people out there who can do it, and just be like, this
or do dark. Like or do like they did with Alden Ehrenreich, and just say, you know what, you don't have to be an exact lookalike, you just have to be able to play the character.
Yeah. And just be like, this is Tarkin.
We've already accepted animated versions of the character who look a little different. Nobody's. I think that the fandom would have accepted it, and I'm okay with it. Even Leia in this movie, Carrie Fisher was alive and gave her permission.
Right, she was alive and able
even
to give her
she
consent.
Even they had to do all the voice modulation and all, but she delivered the line that was in the movie. So that's even okay. But just when they're dead, it's weird.
Yeah, I really don't like that he wasn't able to like consent to that, and that it seems disrespectful to just put someone's body and acting on screen. Yeah. In a CGI form when they are not actually alive to give the performance.
I'm even okay with it with Carrie Fisher in The Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, where, specifically The Rise of Skywalker, because they had most everything filmed for Last Jedi, where she had started filming and then she passed away.
Yeah.
And they were relying on her for this movie, and so then they had to do a little bit of CGI stuff, a little bit of reusing old footage and all to get her in the movie. I'm even okay with that in a certain instance.
But that's different. This is 30 years after the guy passed away. I'm like, that at least, I'm like, you were already in the middle of production. You had to find something to
Mid-filming's a little different.
That is
fine
with me, because I'm like, that is something that you had to just come up with on the fly. This just happened. But this is 30 years later, and you're essentially just animating, and now nowadays poorly animating, this performance of an actor who was fabulous in his time, but... If someone just watches, like, Rogue One or something, then, like, they're not even getting that person's, like, actual real performance. And I don't know. To me, it bothers me a lot.
Yeah. I try and take hard stances towards things I'm real passionate about. This is one of those circumstances for me where it's like, I don't know how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really don't. Like, I see your point, and I see your argument, and I'm not disagreeing with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also not disagreeing with the counterpoint that it's, like, it's keeping his legacy alive.
Well, and that's where I kind of am. I'm not super... It makes me uncomfortable.
Impassioned, yeah.
I'm not, like, I think this is wrong. It makes me uncomfortable to watch it a little bit.
I wasn't as off-put by it as I thought I was going to be, because I remember going back into it going, oh, I remember this is going to look a little weird. I personally didn't care.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, cool, it's Tarkin, you know, and that was the end of it.
Have you heard about the new guy Lucasfilm hired after Mandalorian Season 2?
No.
So there was a YouTuber, I don't remember who his name, but there was a YouTuber who, after Mandalorian Season 2 with Luke, got on YouTube and said, I can do better than this. I can do better than what they did. And he put out like a 30-minute video showing how he did it and redid the footage of the movie, making Mark Hamill look better.
Really?
And it looked legitimately better.
Wow.
Lucasfilm hired him within like a month.
Get out of here!
And he is now like leading their teams on that, on like using deepfake and all.
That is amazing.
And it's been working.
That's awesome.
It's been working.
That's awesome. That's terrifying, but that's awesome.
And,
it's like,
and with some things...
It's awesome for him. Yeah.
Right, right.
It's fine, you know, like with the whole, you know, Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher because they were alive, and it's like, yeah, that's fine. It just bothers me when the person isn't alive to say, yeah, sure, go ahead. Like,
yeah.
You know, or even to, like, give their voice, like, live, like, I'm mm-hmm. actually doing these lines for this purpose with this intent behind it, you yeah. know? It makes, like, my skin crawl. I'm not a fan of it. Well, Rook leads the group to Galen's Imperial Research Facility on the planet Edu, where Cassian chooses not to kill Galen. Jin makes her presence known moments before rebel bombers attack the facility. Galen is mortally wounded by the bombers and dies in Jin's arms before she escapes with her group on board a stolen Imperial cargo shuttle. Krennic is summoned by Darth Vader to answer for the Death Star's attack on Jeddah. I did not remember any of that scene with Darth
Vader.
I only remembered the last scene because you've shown it to me 50 yeah. times, but when we were suddenly there and Vader's like walking in, I was like, how did I miss this? Like, I
got
slept
to
through
see
that whole
Vader's
scene.
Castle on Mustafar!
Yeah, which was, that was pretty yeah. incredible. Seeing him in the tank was absolutely amazing. The shot of Krennic standing there in the shadow of Vader
yeah. Yeah.
was so... awesome.
even the line, the writing in this is phenomenal. If you can't tell by, you know, our quippy K2 droid.
Brought to you by the writer of Ants.
But even the writing of, even Vader coming with a little bit of sass of, don't choke on your own ambitions.
That was such an original trilogy line.
Yes.
That's what, like, is it a little cheesy? Sure. But it is such an original trilogy
line.
Here's
the line. Thing. I don't mind cheesiness in Star Wars because that's what I grew up on was yep. the original trilogy, which had so many cheesy moments. So, like, things like that, I was like, that feels like, you know, what I grew up
with. It feels like
with.
Star Wars.
Yeah,
yes.
This feels like Star
I agree.
Wars. I'm here for
I agree.
It. There's also something that I just want to say that before I forget it. The pacing for this movie was really, really good, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
It was like you had said maybe about Shape of Water, where it was like every time you were like, okay, I'm kind of ready to move on, it moved on. And
yes.
that's exactly what this movie
yes.
did. They never let a moment go too long. Mm-hmm. Like, Cassian and Jin would have a two-line conversation and then cut to the next scene because they didn't need to have a longer conversation.
Right.
Like,
well, because you don't need to know that much about these characters.
No.
You need to know just enough where you care.
Yeah,
and no more.
Just enough to where you want them to succeed, and that is about it.
Yeah, and they did a phenomenal job of that.
Yeah, they did a really good job. So Krennic seeks his support for an audience with the Emperor, but Vader instead force chokes him and orders him to ensure no further breaches occur. Jin proposes a plan to seal the Death Star schematics using the Rebel fleet, but fails to gain approval from the Alliance Council, who feel victory against the Empire is now impossible. Frustrated at their inaction, Jin's group lead a small squad of Rebel volunteers to raid the databank, arriving at Scarif on the stolen Imperial ship, which Rook dubs Rogue One. A disguised Jin and Cassian enter the base with K2SO while the other Rebels attack the Imperial garrison as a diversion.
I think that's the most unbelievable part of the movie for me, is when the Imperial inspectors walk onto the ship, and then Cassian walks out, not even hiding his face, like, in the clothes, and it's like... Do you really think nobody would have noticed that?
Yeah.
That's the one moment in the movie where I was like, I don't know about that.
So the Alliance learns of the raid from intercepted Imperial communications and deploys their fleet in support. I realize I started going and you had a thought about the other thing, Tyler, when I cut you off.
Yes. So to Samuel's dismay, that one part where Cassian is just like walking out, that was honestly something I didn't even think about until you had mentioned it when we were watching the movie. And my thought process, for what it was worth, not to be reductive towards your thought process.
I didn't care about it that much.
Right, yeah. But I saw it, I was like, huh, that's a good point. I don't care at all. Yep. This is great.
It wasn't something I thought about at all.
Especially because, like, again, if this is a love letter to episode four, dressing up as stormtrooper slash imperial officer slash death trooper and, you know, in the black armor, it's like, this is great. This is scratching that itch. I like it.
Yeah.
We're doing fine. How are you?
Yeah, that, I will say, when the Alliance, I was kind of annoyed with the Alliance. Because in the meeting, they're all like, no, and just straight up say no. And then they say, okay, we're going to do it alone with like 20 people. Mm-hmm. And they go in, and then the Alliance is like, well, maybe we should go now.
Not without us.
Here's the thing. The majority of the Alliance wanted to go. Wanted to help.
It just needed to be unanimous.
It had to be unanimous. Mm-hmm. Mm. And because it was generally known who was part of the Rebel Alliance, so if the Rebel Alliance took an action, it affected everybody massively.
Right.
So if they weren't in complete agreement, then they couldn't do something.
Well, was everyone in complete agreement at this point?
I think so, I guess. But,
alternatively,
it was Mothma and Bail Organa saying, screw it, we're going anyway.
Which I personally like to think the latter, but that's just because...
Just them going, you know what, if you support it, come on.
Akbar is just like, get me in that ship now. I've been for this from the beginning.
Is that the kind of fish guy?
Yeah.
That was not Akbar.
What?
No, it wasn't Akbar.
No, he was a different shade, and they called him like Admiral Bossin or something, but that was not Akbar.
Wow. I feel that's racist against the Lemurians. Nope. Not what they're called.
Mon Calamari.
Mon Calamari.
We got to love our loyalists.
We love space racism.
Check my privilege, please.
Got to love our Mon Calamarans. And the dedication to the cause.
Well,
he got a much more unceremonious send-off in The Last Jedi.
Oh, yeah, he did. Which
he
was
died
dumb.
And they didn't even talk about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
Moving on.
The whole thing was a trap.
In one of the most heartbreaking, in one of the first of several heartbreaking moments of the end of this movie, K2SO sacrifices himself so that Jyn and Cassian can retrieve the data. Imwe is killed after activating the master switch to allow communication with the rebel fleet.
Which is probably my favorite scene.
It's so awesome.
I say that.
He just walks through all of the blaster fire, just confident that the force is going to take him there.
And it
did. Finds the switch, pulls it, and then it's just fine. He's like, all right. And then he gets shot, and he's not like betrayed because he's like, the purpose was for me to flip the switch.
Yeah.
Yes.
You let me do
that. At that point, he's at peace because clearly
the force is with him, allowing him to do that. The one thing that he was like, this is what I have to do for this cause.
That's how you do a holy man, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It was so good. His entire like start
and
to finish,
and that thing could have been really cringe if they didn't do it right. Like it so could have been just like that was so extra and like dramatic and
like he could have been like sitting there ninja dodging and posing and doing all that junk.
Yeah, and he kind of had to die.
He did.
Like honestly, like in order
he could not have survived.
He kind 100%. Of had to die there,
and it was Well, his intro. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. I mean, that's kind of the whole. You know, again. We don't see the continuation of these characters past the sequel. Mm-hmm. And you know that if any of the characters have made it beyond that point, they would have become major characters in the trilogy that we now know and love as 4 through 6.
Right.
Yeah.
They would become major characters. So guess what? They have to go.
Yeah.
And the writers did it perfectly to where it wasn't like, oh, we have to write them off for this sake. It's we write them off for the purpose of leading up to this.
Yeah,
point.
They all essentially sacrifice themselves for the purpose of, you know, being able to save everything.
Yeah.
And even Cassian and Jyn, they're just like, at that point, they're like, there's no escape for it, but we did it. Like, we did it, and at some point, someone will destroy it. And we served our purpose.
Even his introduction with him just sitting there, just talking about the Force, and then as soon as Jyn Erso walks by, he goes, trade your fortune for that necklace. And she's like, not even like, you don't even see the necklace on her. And she's just like, how in that?
Because he can sense the kyber crystal.
He can sense that it's a kyber crystal, which is so cool. Ah, I love that.
I think this is the first slash only actual of Disney, not Disney, the only actual Star Wars movie which references kyber crystals. I think
really?
This is the only one. None of the original six do. Because kyber crystals don't really become a thing in Star Wars until the Clone Wars. The Clone Wars introduced this idea of kyber crystals.
You're right. Well, I think in the novelization of 1, 2, and 3, they expand on it more.
Probably, yes.
So it was in the ether, but it was actually shown.
Yep.
On the Clone Wars. Mentioned in the movies, mainstream movies, it was not mentioned until, I think, Rogue One.
Right. But it wasn't the Clone Wars that was the progenitor. Right. But that was the first time you saw it. Okay, yeah, I got you.
Yeah, and see, I wasn't even just talking about, like, his death. That character as a whole could have been just, like, really cringe if it wasn't for the actor and, like, how the actor sold it. Because it really towed the line of, like, if this goes one step further, it could just be a really cringe character.
Yes.
But he was so good with it and made you, like, actually buy into the idea that, yeah, this is a real person. Like, who just acts like this and is like this and has this ability to pick up on, like, force sensitive. It's so force sensitive.
Well, and I think a big part of that was having Baze there, having this.
Yeah.
Having this guy who used to believe all that and now is very. Has become much more skeptical and much more of a cynic.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's big to have, you know, have them playing off each other for both of their characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. And so. I mean, Donnie Yen did a fantastic job of selling that. The whole bit where he's fighting with the staff and he stabs the guy in the foot. He's like, is your foot okay? And he just gives it like, God, man. That is one of my favorite things to see in just movies in general or just really media is just overconfident and just I'm not angry, but I'm kicking butt and I'm having a great time doing it. Like, that to me just makes me
it reminded me a lot of and Sam, you'll get where I'm going with this once I explain it, but their partnership did remind me of like our Iggy and Bago thing in Fall of the Republic, where Iggy is basically the backup for Bago's chaos. It just reminded me of how like Baze is there to like cover Chirrut's like butt basically whenever he gets himself in trouble, and as he's walking away he's like, good luck, and he's like, I don't need luck, I have you, and Baze is like and just like follows along like, all right. No, I thought that was very, very funny. But yeah, he's killed after activating the switch, and Malbus is killed shortly afterward. And that's why I really appreciate this movie, because it gives like the characters that could have even the smallest arc of character development, that character development before their end. Because Baze, like you said, was like pretty skeptical, but then when he like, you know, watches his friend like die, he actually gets up and is like saying the same little mantra over and over.
Yep.
Whether it's because he now believes or just as a testament to his friend, you don't really know. But the fact that he's even, like, willing to, like, you know, to like, you know, say those words, like, shows a development of his, I guess, belief at that point.
I think they'd introduced the two of them as being members of the Protectors of the Wills.
Guardians of the Wills, and they were the protectors of the Kyber Temple
before it got plundered by the Empire. Yeah. So they're kind of like the two like last remaining guardians of that temple, and so it tells you that Maze was a former believer, and then his faith was shaken. I like to believe that Maze, after seeing Imwe, literally just repeat that mantra and just walk through all that blaster fire and then accomplish his goal. Seeing that, he's just like, yeah, you know what? You're right. The Force is a thing. Mm-hmm. And then he goes in and he's just like, I'm one with the Force too, you know, mother, lover, and starts going through. And it's just, oh man, it's so satisfying to watch. This is a good movie, guys. You need to watch it.
Well, Rook is killed by a grenade after informing the Rebel fleet that it must deactivate the planetary shield to allow the transmission of the schematics.
He's an underrated character.
He really is.
I so agree.
And again, he's so good. Again, there's another character that has that moment of just peace, because he had been trying to accomplish this one thing to like achieve this greater goal. He did it, and when the grenade comes in, there's no fear. He's just like, all right. Cool.
All signed up for this knowing they were probably gonna die.
Yes. Yeah. And he's just like, at least I managed to succeed before I died.
Yes.
Like, and it was such a moment where you actually see him maybe even be a little bit grateful, like, finally over. Like, because we don't know what's going on really inside his head. We know he got a little messed up by the thing that Saul put him through.
Borgullet,
yeah. And so, like, for all we know, he's been, like, suffering through the whole movie.
Oh my god.
But no, I thought that was just a really good moment with him. I agree, he is a very underrated character. But Rebel Admiral Raddus uses a Hammerhead Corvette.
Raddus.
Again, I said this last night, Hammerhead Corvette is an awesome band name and someone needs to have it. But he uses a Hammerhead Corvette to destroy two Star Destroyers, and the wreckage crashes atop the shield generator, deactivating the shield. Okay, this is where I got confused. So there are the two Star Destroyers there.
Uh-huh. Correct.
Whose side were they on?
All the Star Destroyers are Imperial.
Okay.
They're 100% Imperial.
I did not get that, and I didn't know that from any other lore.
Okay.
So because I didn't notice the outside of the ship until the Alliance had appeared. I thought they brought those with them.
No.
Oh.
So when they start destroying them, I'm like, your friends are in there. Like, no.
Star Destroyers are...
canonically.
They are Imperial ships.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, that was something I needed explained because I was very confused. Because
you'll see ships that look very similar to them in Revenge of the Sith and in Clone Wars,
the Venerators, right?
Yeah.
But that's because they're the Republic precursors to the Imperial Star Destroyers.
Yep.
Okay.
They're so like the setup, and so once they become Imperial, you see the Clone Troopers instead of wearing the Clone Trooper armor, it graduates to the Stormtrooper armor, which is different. And just like the Venerators and like the different fighters and things that they use, it all evolves.
And if you want more lore on the on what it was like going from the Empire to from the Republic to the Empire, from the military side of things, go watch The Bad Batch. It's really good.
Yeah.
I would recommend it.
I still need to finish that, actually.
So Jin and Cassian obtain the schematics but are ambushed by Krennic, who is shot and wounded by Cassian. Jin transmits the schematics to the Rebel command ship via the base's antenna, completing the transmission moments before the Death Star enters orbit above Scarif. Tarkin uses another low-power shot to destroy the antenna, killing Krennic, but the impact of the blast beyond it causes a tsunami that engulfs the base, killing Cassian, Jin, and all remaining ground forces. I will say, I loved so much that this movie put in just the right amount of romance between those characters to where you got it. But it wasn't like they stopped in the middle of this dramatic moment to like make out or something. It was like they had this connection, but they also acknowledged that they were like, this is far more important than that.
I do not think it was romance.
I think it was.
Definitely was.
The looks that they gave each other throughout the film, how close they you could feel the tension. I think it was absolutely right.
Even if you didn't pick up on it, I think that was the director's intention because of the way that he placed them near each other. Like that moment when he brings her all those other people and he's like, I believe you. And they sort of walk around each other
and
in this like
little moment. And it looks like they're about to kiss.
It looks like he's about to like grab her and kiss her because they're so close and they're kind of like looking at each other and they're like kind of almost like testing each other out. She's giving him this little like look. I'm like, this is a straight up like blossoming romance.
Again, it's the subtlety of it all is what makes it like that's how you write like a subplot romance
for a movie like this.
Yes,
because the romance isn't the high. We're not.
No,
we
not
do
at
not. Because guess what?
It's
who cares about a romance where both the characters are dead by the time the other movies come out? Nobody.
Well, I say it's set dressing. It's not because it's not a romance. Here's the thing. I'm real hard on this belief specifically. Because I think this is a really, really good example of a male and female platonic relationship that doesn't end in romance, which I think is criminally underutilized in Hollywood.
But this is not what I think that is. I agree. Whenever success, that's why I get so mad at people for saying that should have been Harry and Hermione. No, it shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
And we need that representation of a guy and a girl can just be best friends and that can be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. Mm-hmm. And I also don't think that they ever had a romantic chemistry. They were just best friends the whole time, brother and sister.
Yeah.
And
save that one time where they went dancing.
Well, even that wasn't romantic. That was goofy.
We'll talk about that when we do that in a year.
But this specifically was, I picked up on it as romance, but I appreciated it because it wasn't like an overbearing, suddenly the rest of the movie is about like their romance or whatever is going on. They're going to stop all of this to have one last, to have like their first and last kiss together. And it's like, no, they're not. Just let them like do their thing, do this mission together.
And at least they didn't chuck it aside like they did with, was it Flynn and Rose in the sequels?
Oh my god! Disgusting.
I hate it. Stop.
We'll get there.
At least it was utilized to a certain degree.
Yeah, but I just I definitely saw it as romance.
I agree. There was too much tension. Just based on the staging.
Yeah, the staging alone was definitely setting it up as romantic. But yeah, so the Rebel fleet prepares to jump to hyperspace, but Admiral Raddus and many of the fleet's ships are intercepted by Vader's arriving Star Destroyer. Yeah.
But they had a decent...
That's another reason why it's not Ackbar, because he's definitely dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
Admiral Raddus's ship does not get away.
Yeah, you know it's... They had a decent chance until that showed up.
What's the name of Vader's ship?
Shoot, hold on.
So Leia was there in the Alliance like fight, basically. Yes. And she just got away in like an escape ship.
Yes.
Okay.
In the Tantive IV.
Okay.
Which the Executor.
Yeah.
Well, Vader boards the Rebel command ship and kills many of the Rebel troops in an attempt to regain the schematics, but a starship escapes with them on board. Aboard the fleeing ship, Princess Leia declares that the schematics will provide hope.
I don't care what you say. There's nothing wrong with fan service if it's done like that Vader hallway scene.
Oh my god.
I am a fan. Service the account. Please.
Like, because that's the thing, in the original trilogy, they didn't necessarily have the means to show Vader just going ham.
Right.
And that wasn't the point of the original trilogy.
Right.
So having a movie like this where you could just say...
You actually see his power.
This is Vader at full power is just so terrifying.
Spoilers.
And it like gives a good like ending... spike of like adrenaline to oh god get the thing out, they've worked so hard, get it through the door. Like and then you not only that but you see that Leia was right there,
two doors away
and they meet within Vader and Leia meet for the first time within 12 hours of this.
They do,
because this leads directly into a new
right world. Into it also spoilers for Jedi Fallen Order, don't listen to the next 30 seconds of what I'm about to say. It's the same thing like the end of Jedi Fallen Order when Vader shows up. Vader shows up and you're like, I'm going to fight him. And you immediately realize, I don't win this.
The game literally does not give you the option. You cannot.
You can't. It doesn't impossible. Matter how good you
and
are.
And I love that you train so much throughout the game to get so good so you can beat an Inquisitor.
And you beat
an Inquisitor and you're like, I feel so cool. And then Vader walks in and is like, well, crap.
Not even close. And he just decimates. Everywhere he walks is just destruction. Is like
the
metal
the
flying.
The power balancing in Fallen Order is just incredible.
It really is. And it shows you, like, it's these moments that show you why Vader is such a name in the galaxy. He has solidified himself as one not to be messed with, which is really cool.
Which makes a lot of sense considering like that he is, you know, of the highest like midichlorian like count ever. And
yeah, he's
so
the chosen
of course,
one. Yeah.
His force ability would be off the charts.
Well, that's the thing.
Some would say bustle.
This isn't even Vader at peak.
No.
Vader at peak is in Revenge of the Sith.
Yes.
That is peak Vader power.
Yes.
Because once you get all four of your limbs cut off, you lose a certain amount of your connection.
I mean,
the
once
force.
Once you kill a bunch of children,
depending,
that's where all the power comes from.
Well, depending on who you ask, because so from what I've read, Vader in the suit, his lightsaber prowess is actually stunted pretty significantly, which the fact that he's still that good speaks for itself. It's his connection with the Force that actually gets way, or the, with the dark side of the Force gets way stronger because the suit
is awful.
He is
actually
awful.
Not quite as strong in the Force, just because you really can't be, but his rage is so strong it makes up for it.
Hmm.
Because the suit that Sidious puts him in purposefully is
torture.
He's in constant agony.
Yeah.
The only reprieves he gets is when he's in the back to tank. other than that, he is in like constant agony.
Yeah, the suit like hurts to be in,
which
is awful. The thing about that is so
which that pain and that rage just enhances his connection with the dark side specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that is Rogue One, guys.
And it's susceptible to lightning.
Well, Samuel, I mean, this doesn't really fit into the trilogies
of
anything.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, we can
just rename it. Yeah, so we'd have to like rename it something totally different because it's its own separate thing.
This is cringe. So the because I'm terrible at this game. At Disney and Star Wars Land, they have Rise of the Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna call it Rise of the Rebellion.
I was thinking about calling it the Birth of the Rebellion, but that's not even because that rebellion's been going on for a while. Rise would make more sense than birth.
That's why I said it.
Yeah. I was agreeing with you.
No, I know. I'm just being a jerk.
A New Hope.
Oh my gosh.
Cringe.
Cringe. Wow.
I don't know.
I mean, I would literally just call it, like, it's not very creative, but I would probably just go with the beginning of the end. That's what I would call it.
Star Wars Hope : Deliverance.
No.
It's the worst.
That's so awful.
It's a terrible, terrible name.
John.
The Last Chance.
Okay. I like that.
Not Point Break?
No, not Point Break.
You sure you want to check?
I am just a leap and
Didn't
a bounce.
Didn't Rick make a Point Break joke?
I think he did.
Yes! Let's go! That's awesome! Since that happened, every episode you get one!
John, you just, you can't.
I forgot it was a movie.
John, you can't.
I forgot it was a movie.
You can't live it down when you just name a movie after another movie. No, that would be like if I looked at this movie and was like, you know what? I'm just going to call it Hidden Figures and like and just went with that. Like, that's just
Well, because they think that the Death Star is a moon, and then he's like, that's no moon, so we should honestly
just call
it Moonlight.
Here we go. A Death Star is born.
Oh my god! That's good! That's really good.
That's terrible.
Oh my god.
Well, we're moving on from this cursed segment. I went on Amazon. The general consensus is pretty good. 83% rated at 5 stars. So I have one negative, and then I have 2 positives. I just want y'all to choose. The reviews are somewhat similar from these 2 users, but just based on the names, I want you to choose which one you want to hear. So the first user is called Nomad Snake, and the second one is called, and this is the full name, Kid at Heart and Renaissance Man. Which one would you like to hear?
If we don't hear Kid at Heart and Renaissance Man,
please,
I'm going to be personally offended.
The 2 reviews really aren't that different. I just loved both of their names. So
Nomad Snake's pretty good, but Kid at Heart. And not only is he a kid at heart, he's
also a Renaissance man.
Shoot, we got it. Please regale us with his words.
Well, this is titled "My New Favorite Star Wars Film," and this is from 2017. I enjoyed Rogue One better than any previous Star Wars film. The acting, storyline, and cinematography are first rate. This film answers so many questions about what happened between the destruction on the Jedi Temple in Episode 3 and the destruction of Alderaan in Episode 4. I don't get tired of watching it over and over. The most amazing thing in this film is the incredibly realistic CGI. It is so realistic that at some points it's unsettling. 5 stars.
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
Yeah. And then this one is from Hugh H, and it's a negative one. So this was from 2019, and it's titled "Extremely Disappointed." I don't understand how this movie received good reviews. The storyline was close to incoherent. The acting was pedestrian at best. The sprinkling of has-been actors with no speaking lines was a head shaker. This movie left me with the impression it was a compilation of edited floor cuttings from earlier Star Wars movies and stolen scenes from Independence Day. Nothing original here, folks. Just lots and lots and lots of people getting blasted or blown up. 1 star.
Hugh, listen to me very closely. You're an idiot. You're a fool and a child, but not a child at heart.
No,
a Renaissance man. Neither of those.
Well, what was funny is there was another review that was that seemed like it was going to be negative about the movie and not about the product. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think they just straight up reviewed the wrong Star Wars movie. I think they meant to review one of the sequel trilogy, because they were like, the casting on Solo's son was terrible. And I was like, Solo's son isn't in this movie as far as I know. And so I was like, I think he meant to review like Rise of Skywalker or Last Jedi or something.
Or he was just really gone and just watching the movie thinking it was something completely
different. He got really drunk and then just looked up the first Star Wars movie he could find and reviewed it poorly.
Wow. That sounds about right.
But
he's going to be so embarrassed if he hears that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he's listening.
It's like, I've been called out.
I didn't even say his name, so it's fine. But what do you guys think this is rated critically on Rotten Tomatoes?
I'm going to say it's exactly what the Amazon thing was. I'm going to say 83%.
You said what?
83%.
Okay.
Critically?
Yes.
78. That was me, sorry.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to settle with an 85. I think it's a little better than the IMDb or Amazon review, whichever one.
Well, John and Sam, y'all are equally...
it's 84.
Yeah, it's 84. Mm. Yeah, y'all both were the equal point away.
Wow.
And audience score, also out of 100.
I have no gauge on whether this is going to be higher or lower.
It's got to be lower, because I know a lot of people had some...
I'm going to say 79%.
Okay.
I'm a hold it down at 78.
Okay.
I'm a holder at 81.
John, you're closer because it is 86.
Wow!
Yeah.
You guys are great. I've never had any problems with the Star Wars fandom.
And the IMDb score out of 10?
Say 7.3.
Okay.
80. No, I'm kidding. 7.8. Help. I'm okay. Having a stroke.
I'm going to say 8.2.
You are exactly right, Tyler. 7.8. I was like, if you change it
he
now, after you said 70,
there, but he got there.
After you
a
said 78
clock
twice,
right,
I was
going to
laugh so hard. Yeah, so this one had a budget of $220 million, and it made $1.056 billion.
Good for them. I did not know it made that much money.
I
made
didn't
a
either. Good for them.
Wow. Yeah, it made a lot of money.
Bangarang.
Well, I have some fun facts here. So, Gareth Edwards and his creative team discovered some old film canisters while rummaging around the Lucasfilm warehouses. When he asked what they were, an employee said that they were old Star Wars Episode IV A New Hope footage. The discovery led to the inclusion of unused Episode IV material featuring Red Leader and Gold Leader in this movie.
That's incredible.
Get
That's
out
awesome.
Of here.
Mm-hmm. I thought y'all would like that. So, Anthony Daniels, who plays C-3PO, for anyone who doesn't know, was jokingly disgruntled that Alan, say his last name for
Tudyk.
Me?
Tudyk.
Tudyk, was allowed to play K-2SO in the relative comfort of a motion capture suit, whereas Daniels had to endure years of discomfort and injuries in the C-3PO costume. Daniels laughingly cursed at Tudyk after Rogue One's premiere. Tudyk later said that an F-U from Daniels was one of the highest compliments he had ever received.
They were in this film, weren't they? And
Yeah, they were in it for like 1 second, which actually makes it to where Anthony
yeah.
Daniels is the first, is the only actor to be in
every
Star
single
Wars
Star
movie.
Wars, yeah.
Yep. Jen's father, Galen, is modeled after J. Robert Oppenheimer, the father of the atomic bomb.
I knew it!
Mm-hmm. Both
knew
men
it.
Share the same guilt factor of becoming an agent of death.
He is one of the most fascinating, like, historical figures to me. Mm-hmm. I love just listening to... Just reading stuff written by him, listening to podcasts about his life and all.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really neat.
Interesting.
The Rebel base at Yavin 4 features several full-sized cardboard cutouts of X-Wings and Y-Wing fighters using the same technique of filling out the hangar as in the original Star Wars Episode 4.
I love that.
So they didn't use CG for that, apparently. The studio only had two choices to play Chirrut, Donnie Yen and Jet Li. Yen was approached first because of his salary of $4 million against Lee's $10 million. To gauge his interest and as secondary plan, director Gareth Edwards also offered him the other role of Baze. Yen expressed interest in playing Chirrut, but was hesitant in accepting it because it required him to be away in London for 5 months. However, it was his young son's love of the Star Wars films and comics that wore down his reluctance, and it was his idea to make his character blind.
That's
wow.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. So the blindness was actually...
That was his choice. Yep. Gareth Edwards said that he came up with the planet name Scarif after ordering a coffee in a Starbucks shop which, you know, will write the names of the customers on the cups, and the barista had misspelled Gareth's name as Scareth.
No
way. And so
he
thought of the planet named Scareth.
That's precious. I love that.
In earlier versions of the script, Lyra Erso was a Jedi. This was abandoned in later versions as the idea of exploring the lives of the galaxy's normal inhabitants, especially after the fall of the Jedi Order, was considered more interesting.
I completely agree.
100%.
Yeah, I agree too. At one point, Chirrut Imwe says, "May the force of others be with you." This was from George Lucas's original rough draft screenplay of Star Wars called The Star Wars, and was used in the similarly named Dark Horse comic adaptation in 2013 and 2014.
Dark Horse Comics.
And last but not least, when Vader is first seen, this is something that y'all kind of talked about a little bit. He is in a Bacta tank like the one that Luke uses in episode 5 after being wounded by the, is it Wampa?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is a nod to Vader's history in the extended universe, where it's known that he repeatedly spends extended periods of time in the Bacta tank in hopes that it will repair the damage done to his lungs from the lava on Mustafar. Well, and
that's in the original trilogy too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. What?
I'm pretty sure that you see him.
No,
in the
he's
back
in a meditate. He's not in the back of the tank. He's meditating with his mask off.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, because he absolutely hates having to rely on the mask to breathe.
Call yourself a fan.
All right. So for this recasting, I already know who I want you three to play. In my opinion.
All right. Really?
Oh, yes. Oh, I already do.
Lay it on me.
Baze.
Yes.
Chirrut.
Yes.
And Cassian.
Yes.
That's who I want you three to play.
Yes.
As I was watching it last night, I had already cast it.
And there's only one option for Danielle.
K2SO. I was so hoping you were going to say K2. I would love to play K2.
I was going to say Krennic.
I would also love to play Krennic. That would be a lot of fun.
She could be either one.
Yeah. But I personally, you'd kill either one, but K2 would be probably more fun.
K2, I'd have so much fun playing K2. So favorite and least favorite moments from this one. I know my boys.
Vader. Vader is my favorite. Cassian walking out and getting ignored is my least favorite. Moving on.
Okay.
Walking out and getting ignored.
Yeah, when he walked out of space showing.
I got you.
My least favorite was having to watch Borg Gullet go on the dude's head and I don't think he actually went in his ears. I think it was just on his temples. But it was still really gross to me. I didn't like all the little, blah, 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 like, all over him. It kind of grossed me out.
Hit us with that noise one more time.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. I didn't like it. My favorite... The moment when I was, the most, my blood was pumping a little bit was definitely either Chirrut's final scene, where he's just walking through the fire, and then Baze's, following scene, or... when both Cassian and Jyn are climbing climbing the data tower to try and get up. I loved both of those.
I will say, my favorite's the obviously Darth Vader, but I'm just to keep it interesting. I really liked Chirrut's first introduction, his introduction into the fight. I watched that fight scene with so much just childlike, it's so fluid, and Donnie Yen is such a prolific martial artist. It's so fun to watch. And his snarkiness is just great. Least favorite, I would say, is the handling of... what's his name? The pilot with Saw Gerrera's people. Yeah, Rook.
Yeah.
Saw Gerrera's people. He's just like, I'm a defector. I'm trying to help. And they're like, we hate you. And he's like, dude, come on. that just made me sad. But that would probably be my least favorite.
Gotcha.
Definitely wasn't a big fan of the Borg gullet probing.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Just, dude.
I thought it was cool.
It made
me uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah, it made me uncomfortable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was more uncomfortable. Visually, it was like, oh, it's not done poorly. I just
hate the idea of something blah, 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 onto my brain and doing things. It's gross.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Tentacles everywhere. Anyway, I think we're all aware that Vader was arguably probably the best, one of the best parts in that whole film. But much like Tyler, to keep it interesting, I really enjoyed K2's re-entry after... Cassian and Jyn.
Are you talking about when he's you asked me to wait and I got bored, and then he just goes, this is great for people trying
I
to
love
be
it
subtle
so much because he is absolutely tearing Cassian a new one, but he's absolutely bodying these four or five stormtroopers that are causing chaos, and he grabs a grenade and Jin's like and he's like, well, what throws it?
And he did it, and the coolest thing was he held it just enough time to cook the grenade just a little longer, so the mm-hmm. second it makes contact with the ground, it explodes and kills the guys, which is fun little war thing.
I love that.
For all my so war people fun. Out there who are fans of, you know, war.
For all those people out there who are pro-war.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. Holler if you hear me.
Well, out of 10 holograms, what would you rate Rogue One?
I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. I adore it. It can't be quite a 10 out of 10 for me just because my favorite Star Wars is Saga Star Wars, but 9 out of 10.
All right.
I'm coming in.
Wow. It's raining in our house, guys.
I'm going to come in with an 8.5. It's really, really good. It doesn't have that fact that, like, that X factor. I know that sounds really, like, esoteric, but, like, it doesn't have that X factor of, like, whoa, my God! Like, this is the greatest movie ever! But it's tight, top to bottom, super enjoyable to watch.
It's got good rewatchability.
And
you keep taking John's bit from him.
I'm sorry, John. But it does. It's really good. Like, that's a factor for me as well. I mean, it's mm-hmm. not exclusive to John, but I just thought it was tight top to bottom, and the only flaws were that it wasn't, like, you know, drop, you know, not enough lightsabers for me, excuse me. No. I'm kidding, that's not a real thing. But
all right, John, what do you think?
I'm going to go a little lower than Samuel. I'm gonna give it 8.9 holograms. Like Tyler said, the rewatchability was was fantastic. This is a movie I can go back and rewatch without having to worry about watching others as a standalone film. It holds its own. Again, the subtlety in the writing, the effects, the storytelling was absolutely there. It did, you know, it gave both sides of the coin, the prequels and, you know, the sequels, justice in their own right. I deducted a little more than Samuel because the CGI for both, not only Tarkin. Why did I say Tarkin? No. I mixed Krennic and
Yeah.
Princess Leia just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Especially Leia's. I don't know what it was about Leia's CGI, but I was like, that looks like it was done with a refacer app.
Yeah, especially now that we have seen, like, far better. It is a little painful.
Yeah, that's where the point deducts for me, but definitely a good film. Nice comedic balance with drama. It's beautiful.
I think I'm actually gonna go with Samuel. I think I'm gonna do 9 out of 10 for it. I really, really, really like this movie. It's beautiful to watch. The acting is really good. It's paced really well. I'm only taking off that one point just because I did get lost at different points. But as someone who is not, like, a massive Star Wars fan, I felt like it had enough, you know, callbacks and, you know, sort of like fan service for, you know, people like you guys, but also enough brand new characters to where I didn't feel like I was being left out. Like, I could be a part of the party and be like, this is great. Like, these are all new characters. I'm getting to know them with you. Like, this is awesome. Very
user-friendly.
Yeah, it's very user-friendly for everybody, and I had a really good time with it. So I would give it a 9 out of 10. And I believe that's everything that we have for you guys today. So just a reminder, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artists Entertainment and on Twitter at artists_mad. We're working on Call of Cthulhu. We've gotten a little slowed down just because we have a whole new project going on at the moment. But Tyler, tell us a little bit about Forced Comedy and when it's going to come back.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago I said that Forced Comedy was going to be up, and I lied. Well, you've been fooled. I've tricked you, my thousands of fans for Forced Comedy. You've been deceived. No, we were just going to post the raw footage on YouTube, but then we decided we wanted a little bit more quality to really, you know, give something back to our fans. So we're working on that. We're working on shaping it up, getting the editing a little tighter. Forced Comedy will be returning when we feel like it. No. It may not be back this week because we have a real big project that's
mm-hmm. that's a it's big, kind of, it's kind of put, secret. Yeah, it's kind of put everything else on hold.
It has very seriously affected the company in a good way, but it has absorbed all of our resources. So once that project is done and dealt with, then we will be returning back to a normal schedule. I'll be more vocal about that probably on the next podcast. Mm-hmm. To all the people who, if you're disappointed in the fact that Force Comedy is on break, please reach out and let me know. It will validate my existence more than you have any idea.
But yeah, you guys can leave us a review wherever you're listening. That really helps us out a lot. Next week, we're going to be doing 42 as our, sort of our tribute to Black History Month. It's one of Samuel's all-time favorite movies about Jackie Robinson. So we're really excited about that. And we will